This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, the latest WikiLeaks dump of email documents from the Clinton campaign provides greater insight into Hillary Clinton's description of conservative Christians as a quote-unquote basket of deplorables. We'll talk about this latest revelation with Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League, in just a moment. And we've been talking about the contrast between the major political party platforms this week. Now, you know, a lot of people are asking, do these documents really mean anything? Of what significance are they? Well, we'll be joined by Dr. Lee Payne, professor of political science, who conducted a study analyzing over two decades of party platforms. We're going to talk with him a little bit later here on Washington Watch. You won't want to miss that conversation. Also, no doubt, taking note of Target's bathroom blunder, the shareholders of one of the nation's largest consumer product manufacturers overwhelmingly rejected an effort to join the fray. President of Citizens for Community Values in Cincinnati, Phil Burris, joins me with the details a little bit later. The website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics. And again, lots of resources there for you at the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins, that's where you can find me. All right. You recall this. This was a comment that Hillary Clinton made the night that Donald Trump spoke at the Values Voter Summit, and he talked to conservative Christians, socially conservative Catholics and evangelicals, who he talked about the courts, he talked about homeschooling, he talked about all of these issues. And that night, Hillary Clinton, making reference to his discussion with these conservative voters as she was speaking before an event, an LGBTQ and so on event, this is what she had to say.
You can put half of Trump supporters into what I call the basket of deplorables. Right? The racist, sexist, homophobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic, you name it.
Now, in complete candor, she did apologize the following day for saying half. Because maybe that was an overstatement. It wasn't half. It was only 40% of Trump supporters. Anyway, this batch of, latest batch of WikiLeaks hacked emails, and I want to emphasize these were hacked. This was from John Podesta. He is the campaign chairman for Hillary Clinton, and they were illegally obtained from his email inbox. Okay, so I don't condone that. But this information is now out there, and it's revealing the comments that were made internally about conservative Christians, about Catholics and evangelicals. Joining me now to discuss this is the president of the Catholic League, my good friend Bill Donahue. Bill, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much, Tony, and thanks, Catholics and evangelicals, standing together against these bullies.
Well, you and I have stood together a number of times because we believe in religious freedom in this country, and our view of religious freedom is consistent with that of the founders, that you should be free to live your life according to your beliefs.
That's exactly right. And, you know, what's amazing about these people, and I'm glad you mentioned how she was so upset about anti-everything else. Now we have anti-Christian statements, anti-Catholic statements being made by people who are high up in her campaign. And now, today, the new revelation, a new development, John Podesta, in the thread, in WikiLeaks, now working with others for a revolution. That's their words, not mine. A revolution. They want to sow the seeds of a revolution within the Catholic Church, which is why they created these phony Catholic groups like Catholics in Alliance for the Common Good and Catholics United, both funded by George Soros. So here's the connection, people. The point man for all of this is John Podesta. He creates these phony Catholic groups to act like termites and to engage in mutiny against the Catholic Church, and he gets the money from George Soros, and then he has groups like Catholics United, which then work with their friends at the IRS to come after me, which they did in 2008, which I could go on for quite a while, which I won't do. But I'm saying this is far worse than just a bigoted comment. We know they have people who are anti-Christian bigots high up in the Clinton campaign. We now have something far more serious, more than just obstructionists. They actually want to create a, quote, revolution within the Catholic Church.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that disdain that they have for Catholics. Now, this was an exchange between John Halpin and Jennifer Palmieri, who is the communications director for the Clinton campaign. And Halpin talks about how, quote, many of the most powerful elements of the conservative movement are all Catholic, many converts, he has in parentheses. From the Supreme Court to think tanks to the media and social groups is an amazing bastardization of the faith. They must be attracted to the systematic thought and severely backwards gender relations and must be totally unaware of Christian democracy, end quote. Sounds pretty slanted in their disdain.
Well, it's more than slanted. I mean, there's a game plan here. As I say, that comment is untoward, it's offensive, it's insulting, it's manipulatory. But now we have a new round. Sandy Newman, who's the founder of a left-wing group, Voices for Progress, said in an email to Podesta, how can we, quote, plant the seeds of the revolution? And then Podesta, they come back and they say there needs to be a Catholic spring in which Catholics themselves demand the end of a middle-aged dictatorship and the beginning of a little democracy and respect for gender equality in the Catholic Church. And then Podesta comes back and says, yeah, that's what I've been doing. I'm creating these phony Catholic groups, which I've exposed for a long time, just like Catholics for a Free Choice. It's always George Soros' money from the Open Society Institute, and it's always these groups who are no more Catholic than I am Buddhist, or you are a Taoist as opposed to being an evangelical. And yet they use these names out there to try and confuse people. But this is so pernicious, so invidious, that they would actually try to crash somebody else's religion and create a revolution from within.
It's insightful, though, to the way they think. First off, is they have this disdain for religion, but they also see as an obstacle to their agenda because they have knowledge of it. As Palmieri talks about the subsidiarity of the Catholic teaching, because what that teaching is that, you know, those things that can be done by the individual, those things done at the local level should be done so. We don't need huge, big, overarching government. That's a problem for them. And so they see religion, orthodox religion, I should say, as an obstacle to their agenda.
That's very insightful. You're absolutely right. There's a Catholic doctrine, Christian doctrine, called subsidiarity, which means the people closest to the problem are best able to fix it. That's why I love Mother Teresa, because she worked with the poor. She didn't just write blank checks to people and ask the government to fund some new program. Yes, that's exactly it. Now, if you're a statist, if you believe that government welfare programs are the best way to conquer poverty, and you're certainly going to look at Catholics and evangelicals and Mormons and others, Orthodox Jews and others, in their faith outreach programs, you're going to look at them as a threat. That's why Christopher Hitchens hated Mother Teresa, because he was a socialist. He had the grand design of the state. And these people out there, these Christians out there trying to help the poor, they're just a deterrent, an obstacle. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's exactly a good insight into the way these people think. The mindset is absolutely amazing.
And this is not a new tactic. It goes all the way back to the New Testament church. Paul spends a lot of his time in his 13 letters talking about those who begin to sow false teaching in order to divert the focus of these new converts. And this is what they're doing. They can't defeat Orthodox faith that is founded on truth and focused on Jesus Christ. So therefore, they have to bring in, as you've talked about, these other organizations that are Catholic in name. In fact, they've even started some evangelical organizations that are evangelical in name to try to pervert and twist the teaching of Scripture.
And you know when this happened, Tony? I can tell you when it happened. It happened right after 2004, because at that point, and you certainly played a role in this, the polls showed that the values voters were the most important determinant in getting George W. Bush reelected. something like 25% of the voters signal values as the most important mission. Then you had Soros and others, John Podesta being the key point man. They sat down and decided, why should we yield this out to the Perkinses and Donahue, so to speak? Why should we yield this religious turf to them? But they knew they didn't have enough of the people on the left who are Catholic, at least in terms of the organized ones, and on the left within certainly the evangelical circles. So they created these dummy groups with the idea that, well, you know, just throw a name on it and that'll be good. And then we can at least confuse the public, if nothing else. That's why I say to invade somebody else's home, to crash it with the purpose of upending it, that is pernicious.
Yeah, you see, and there's groups like that that you're absolutely right. The timing of that, you had Bishop Gene Robinson, who had been with the Episcopal Church, came out leading one of these groups, who has spent most of his time since then organizing against individuals like you and me who are speaking out of it, trying to say they don't speak for the Catholic community, they don't speak for the evangelical community. So you're absolutely right. That's what's happening. But what voters need to see here, Bill, is that this is not just something that activists, and you know what? Hey, look, it's a free country. You can do whatever you want to do in this country, that as long as it's legal. Now, it's, I think this is unethical, but you know, it's what they're doing. But this is more than that. This is a political campaign that, to me, this is very revealing of how they would hold religion if they were in office.
Well, they're not just secularists. They're militant secularists. There's a profound difference. And look, when they came out with those comments yesterday, Paul Mary and the others and Podesta not having any integral role, but he never counseled against it. I came out and said, listen, there should be sanctions against these people by Hillary Clinton. But now we know that they've taken to a whole nother level. Now they want to basically crash the Catholic Church and turn it inside out and upside down. That's why I put out a statement here a few hours ago, Tony, saying this guy's got to go. Hillary Clinton is now integrally involved. You cannot have your campaign manager saying that the goal is to work with others to plant the seeds of a revolution, which is exactly the words, I'm not exaggerating, that are found in the latest thread of WikiLeaks emails.
Let me, final question for you, Bill. Polling suggests that Clinton is doing fairly well with white Catholic voters. They're evenly divided, pretty much. 46% favor Clinton, 42% Trump. Is this something that could move those voters?
Well, let's disaggregate. We got a situation here with Catholics between practicing and non-practicing. Are there liberal practicing Catholics? Yes. Are they in a minority? You bet they are. My point is this: non-practicing Catholics have more in common with the nuns, the people who have no religion. They say they have none, than they do with Catholics because they don't go to church. Practicing Catholics are overwhelmingly conservative. Unfortunately, in our society, a lot of young people in particular are moving away from religion,
right.
And so it does tend to skew these things. But yes, in answer to your question, is this something that can make a difference? I'll do everything I can to get the word out, because
right.
This is raw, rank bigotry, and it should not be tolerated against any religious group.
All right, Bill, we're out of time, but I'm sure those practicing Catholics have more to do with the nuns,
the other type
of nuns. Yeah, all right. Thanks so much for joining us, Bill.
Always good to talk
with you. Hey, folks, don't go away. We're on the other side of the break with a look at the party platform.
Did you know that abortion facilities have different health standards from ambulatory surgical centers? On June 27th, in a 5-3 decision, the Supreme Court struck down several provisions of the Texas Abortion Safety Statute in Whole Women's Health versus Hellerstedt. This basic common sense law would have required that abortion facilities be held to the same standard as ambulatory surgical centers, and that abortionists have admitting privileges at a local hospital. These regulations would have protected women from the lax practices of the abortion industry by requiring that abortion centers meet necessary health and safety standards. It is yet another sad example of the abortion distortion bias that is occurring in our nation's highest court. Despite this setback for the pro-life movement, there are many pieces of legislation currently being offered that will protect unborn children and their mothers. For questions and answers on this Supreme Court decision, and for direction on where the pro-life movement can go from here, visit frc.org/womenshealth.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage four. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Are you concerned about the future? The AFA Foundation can help. End-of-year giving allows you to offset your current taxable income, providing you with valuable tax savings on this year's return. And your generous gift will help further the mission of AFA to inform, equip, and motivate people in the culture war for years to come. Through the AFA Foundation, you're supporting the work of the American Family Association by helping individuals and families leave a legacy to help stem the tide of secularism and rebuild our Christian foundations. As the end of the year approaches, carefully considering what to give and when to give it can increase the impact of your gift while still meeting your own needs as well. For example, with a cash donation, your itemized tax return may allow you to receive up to the full value of your charitable gift. Contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, at our website, afafoundation.net, or call 800-326-4543, extension 345.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Glad to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. All right, party platforms. What difference do they make? Do the parties actually listen to them? Is it just, an activity that the activists engage in? Or are the platforms kind of like a rudder on a boat? Do they guide and provide principles for the party? Well, I have someone here that's going to provide a little insight for us. Dr. Lee Payne, Associate Professor of Political Science at Stephen F. Austin State University in Texas. And he conducted a study, in fact, wrote his dissertation, it was a part of his dissertation, looking at over two decades worth of party platforms to determine just what role those platforms played in the way the parties governed. Joining me now is Dr. Payne. Dr. Payne, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for having me.
Well, I have looked at your study, found it fascinating, and was shocked, honestly, if I can say that, by your findings. Tell our listeners about it.
Well, if you read the article and you referenced my dissertation, I took work done by Pomper and Pomper and Lederman from the 40s through the 76 platforms, and then replicated it forward from 1980 through 2008. And one of the key reasons I wanted to do it over this time period is because the parties have become so much more polarized mm-hmm. in this time period. And I wanted to see how that polarization would affect the way that the platforms were written, the promises they made. The whole theory behind the article is platform promise keeping, whether they make promises and then stand by them once they're elected. And what I found and what I thought I would find is that the parties are becoming, their platforms are becoming much more rational as the polarization has increased. And by rational, I mean making promises that that are things that can be measured with mm-hmm. dollar amounts spent in Congress and that kind of thing, instead of irrational promises, which are pledges to basically make America great again, something along those lines.
Right.
There's not a real way to measure that.
Right.
So the parties are becoming much more rational. They're becoming much more distinct, which is good for voters, in my opinion. So polarization doesn't always have to be a bad thing. It's kind of the conclusion I drew from the research I did.
So less platitudes, these high-sounding ideals, to more practical policies is what's finding its way into these platforms.
Yes. Popper and Lederman, they divided the kind of promises that the platforms could make into six different kind of categories. And the rational ones that fall under continuity, so a continuation of something like spending on defense, we're going to continue to spend X amount of dollars on defense. Goals, we want to lower taxes is a goal that they could have, or raise taxes if you're on the Democrat side. Detailed promises and the like. While the non-rational ones fell under what they coded as rhetorical or general. So again, something along the lines of make America great again, or we will shore up the economy without any kind of specifics. Those are what fall under those. But what I found in my research is that the vast majority of the promises that they make in the platforms are of the rational type. 76.2% were rational promises made.
Well, let's talk about those promises. Let's talk about those rational promises. How often, let's start with the Democratic Party. How often does the Democratic Party actually do what they say they're going to do if it's a measurable, practical promise?
A little less than the Republicans, but it's minuscule. It's within, I think, 2.2%. So the Democrats are trying to keep their promises just as well as the Republicans are trying to keep theirs.
Yeah, what percentage of the time?
It's around the 78% time.
So 78% of the time, you're saying that the Democratic Party, the practical policy initiatives that they placed in their platform, they pursued that?
Yes. Now, there's two different things we're looking at here. One is, are the promises they make rational?
Right.
And for both parties, again, there's a 2.2% difference. For the Republicans, were slightly more rational than the Democrats were. But yes, once the paper that you looked at doesn't get into the analysis of the voting, which I did in my dissertation, when they do the votes in Congress on the promises they've made in their platforms, both parties are very good at trying to keep the promises they make. Now, this does not follow all the way to the president's desk, so I didn't track it to see if it was actually passed.
Right.
Some of these are procedural votes.
Right. I understand, but these are priorities. These do become priorities for the parties.
Yes.
Let me just say, I was shocked. Okay, and I've been a part of this. I've been a part of writing platforms. In fact, wrote a large portion of this last platform, amended it as a delegate, and I had no idea that historically the Republicans have actually pursued these things to the degree that your research showed. Now, the 78% for Democrats, what was the percentage for Republicans?
It's around 80% for Republicans. It's real close.
I have to say, again, that's amazing. That
yeah.
would tell me that these party platforms actually have significance.
They do. And one of the things I pointed out in my article that I wrote is the average American doesn't read the party platforms, and I don't blame them. When I did this research for my dissertation and read those party platforms, by the end of it, I never wanted to see another one again because they can, you know, be mind-numbing at times. But that doesn't mean that this information doesn't get out to the average voter. It gets disseminated through radio shows like yours, Rush Limbaugh, the news, even in church. You know, ministers can bring up party platforms in a way that lets the parishioners know which party stands for something that may or may not coalesce with the beliefs of the, you know, the parishioners. So the information gets out.
Wow. Dr. Payne, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for joining us. And again, very helpful, insightful research. Thanks for doing it, and thanks for talking about it with us today.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Dr. Lee Payne, Associate Professor of Political Science at the Stephen F. Austin State University. Folks, I have to tell you, I was surprised. But fascinating stuff. And it goes back to the point I've been making, but just it does it from an analytical standpoint that these party platforms matter. If nothing else, vote the party platform. And you can find it. You can find this comparison at tonyperkins.com. You can take a look at it. Video copy as well as a PDF that you can download. All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to come back and talk about a corporation refusing to weigh in the culture war.
Making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
Well, it looks like our market's very sluggish so far this week, and it looks like that's going to continue, at least today anyway, as we see most of the traders waiting for what else? The Federal Reserve. They're waiting for the minutes from the Federal Reserve to see if there's any more tone changes, maybe a little bit more of a dovish tone as far as interest rate hikes go in December. Just gives you an indication again and more confirmation of how weak the markets truly are when they are driven up or down by the thought of a 25 basis points. That's a quarter of 1% increase in the Federal Reserve rates. That just goes to show how fragile we truly are. Speaking of fragile economies, and this goes to the global economy, Japan's machinery orders drop. That was a little bit unexpected drop. Core machinery orders declined for the first time in 3 months. This is not good, as it looks like this is more indicator that business investment, Japanese manufacturers' businesses, falling 2.2% from the previous month. This is not good news. And by the way, a 2.2% decline in business investment is significant. Now, this is more confirmation of how fragile, again, the economies are globally. And this is in the midst of what I would say are some currency wars going on right now between Japan and China.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Let me remind you, this program is made possible as an outreach of the Family Research Council to keep you informed and to provide you the tools necessary to be salt and to be light. It's made possible by folks like you across the country. If you'd like to partner with us, I would encourage you to go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over, and become a partner with the Family Research Council. Okay. We've talked about this, but you recall Target, you know, wanting to get out front and carry the progressive banner. And after all the stuff unfolded in North Carolina with the North Carolina in Charlotte with their bathroom gender policy, locker room, so on and so forth. Very similar to what happened in Houston, and they got the mayor there in Houston got slapped down by the voters. Well, the mayor, Mayor Roberts in Charlotte, decided she'd do the same thing. She got slapped down by the legislature. And now, of course, corporate America wanting to come down and, on the string as like a puppet of the human rights campaign, these corporations weighing in. Well, there was an effort to get Procter & Gamble, one of the largest consumer product manufacturers in the country, had a shareholders meeting over the weekend. And there was an attempt by one of the shareholders, North Star, to put forth a proposal to try to get Procter & Gamble to weigh in against religious freedom laws, to take a side on these gender issues. And, well, let me just say it was overwhelmingly rejected by the other shareholders. Joining me now to discuss this is someone very familiar with Procter & Gamble. He is the president of Citizens for Community Values in Cincinnati, which is the home of Procter & Gamble, and he has been working with him for quite some time on issues such as this, Phil Burris. Phil, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. My honor.
Well, Phil, let's talk about this. Procter & Gamble refusing, the shareholders, refusing to get involved in these cultural battles. Now, let me just say Procter & Gamble is not pristine on this. They've done other things. But are you surprised that this was overwhelmingly rejected in the wake of what Target has faced?
I'm not at all surprised that the shareholders would vote this way, because the public is with us on these issues. These companies like Target and others are trying to force their values, join in the media to try to force these values on us. And when the shareholders, or we the people, are polled or were asked about this issue, just like as far back as 2004 when we did the marriage amendment here, 62% of the people of Ohio said marriage is one man and one woman. And yeah, you're right. Procter & Gamble is not perfect, but about 10 years ago, we were invited, several of the pro-family leaders were invited to sit down with senior management, and we were pleasantly surprised that they were willing to listen to us, not only about where they placed their advertising, but also their agenda or their policy dealing with the homosexual agenda.
Now, this is pretty interesting because, again, you point out this is the shareholders, although the board of directors also, I think, joined in opposition to this proposal. But the shareholders, for them, you're a shareholder for the most part because you are interested in the bottom line. You want to make money. Target has lost nearly 20% of their value. Their shares have dropped because of their changing room bathroom policy. And so I think this is something that could very well spread among shareholders who are investing in these companies, not to make political, cultural statements, but basically to get a return on their dollar.
Tony, I do not understand why any corporation or any business would want to wade into these public policy issues. You know, Procter & Gamble is in the business of making soap. You know, Target is in the business of selling, you know, clothes and merchandise such as that. Why do they want to do this? And, you know, I cannot thank you and FRC and the other pro-family groups enough, because I believe with all my heart that if Target had not taken a hit for what they tried to do, and I'm sure that your listeners have already heard what they tried to do, and if a boy feels like a girl, he could go into the girl's bathroom. I mean, how absurd that a company would adopt that policy. So I think if it had not been for Target being hit hard, that I'm not so sure this vote would have gone that way.
Well, let's just hope that Procter & Gamble stays clean and they stick to making soap, right?
Yeah, and I'm encouraged to do that. There was, in the meeting that we had with them, it was a confidential meeting, but I will say this, that we were pleasantly surprised, the senior staff, when we showed them some of the ads that they were placing on some of the TV stations, and they were legitimately embarrassed. And they basically said, we don't want to do that anymore. So I give Procter & Gamble maybe a B- right now when it comes to family values, but I do believe that they've come a long way from where they were a few years ago.
Well, that's good to hear. Phil Burris, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks for keeping an eye on things there in Cincinnati, and great to talk with you again.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, Phil Burris, president of Citizens for Community Values. All right, folks, the next segment, I mean, Procter & Gamble makes so many products, the puns could go on forever, but I won't do that. When we come back, we're going to talk more party platform, okay? A lot of you didn't get a chance to weigh in yesterday about whether or not the platform is meaningful to you in terms of guiding your vote from the top of the ticket down to the bottom of the ticket. Does it matter what party people align themselves with? We're going to talk about it here on Washington Watch. So don't go away. Your phone calls are next here on Washington Watch.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit, is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
We live in a day where we have the greatest evidence of the reliability of the text in the New Testament at the very time there's the greatest skepticism about it.
Information is not all that's needed to prove the authenticity of Scripture. We need understanding as well. Author and apologist Dr. James White offers plenty of both in the AFA Cultural Institute DVD, The Reliability of the New Testament. You'll find this resource and much more when you visit afastore.net.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing, he had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife Jenny was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The phone number, 866-372-7234, 866-372-7234. All right. You heard from the professor regarding the party platforms, that they, in fact, do matter. Now, we've been talking about this all week, but I wanted you to hear from Dr. Payne, because it was his study that my team stumbled upon after the Republican convention, and which, as I've talked about, I played a part in writing the final document there. And one of the most conservative and very specific policy initiatives laid out in that proposal, including the repeal of the Johnson Amendment, which would allow churches and nonprofits to speak freely as it pertained to elections and candidates and issues. And so does that matter to you? I mean, we're in a, you know, and I'm not just talking about the top of the ticket where people are troubled by the choice that we have, which it should be a factor, but I mean, all the way down to whether or not a city councilman, school board members. I'm going to tell you, I was in Colorado. This was actually before the Republican convention. I was out there meeting with supporters and speaking at an event, and one of the ladies approached me and said, "Hey, I just want you to know how important the party platform is." Because I think I'd mentioned that I was going to be going to the convention and once again being on the platform committee. And she said, "I want you to know how we've used it." And she may have been on the school board, or maybe she was working with the school board. I don't recall which, but the point was, she made reference to the Republican Party platform as being the key to convincing the entire school board to move along with recognizing parental choice in education. So it is used at every level of government in terms of the elections and the elected officials. So again, we have not had an opportunity to give everybody a chance to weigh in on this, and it's something we can talk about. The IRS allows us to talk about the party platforms and the parties to a greater degree than we can talk about the candidates. By the way, last night, that first interview we did with Bill Donahue, I love to talk with Bill. Very insightful, very passionate. I was on Megyn Kelly last night talking about this topic regarding these latest round of WikiLeaks emails that have been released on the Clinton campaign. And I was on talking about this with Megyn Kelly. And in my concerns about this, very similar to what Bill and I were talking about, but you'd like to see that interview, I talk about how we should be concerned because they hold Christians in disdain who simply want the freedom to live their lives according to their faith. To many of these elitists, religion is just like a glorified social club. It's something you go to that might help you in business or might, you know, make you look more like a good citizen. But they mock Rupert Murdoch, and who is raising his son as children, as Catholic. He's the CEO of News Corp. And the Wall Street Journal managing editor, Robert Thompson, who both being Catholic, and they mock them. Murdoch baptized his kids in the Jordan where John the Baptist baptized Jesus, and they were making fun of that as if, you know, why is this guy doing this? Well, you know, I had the privilege of actually baptizing my youngest son in the Sea of Galilee when I was there last. He had 30 days, not quite a month before, made a profession of faith, and I had the privilege of baptizing. It was a very significant moment. It's something that I don't think he'll forget. I certainly won't. So these things matter to people of faith. And these emails show that Hillary is and her team mock them. And again, I go back to what I said earlier, that we see the well from which the comment of the basket of deplorables was drawn. It is a well of disdain toward Bible-believing, practicing Christians. All right, let's go back. And by the way, again, you can see that at TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to talk about the party platform. Does it make a difference to you as you vote, especially in this upcoming election? We're going to go to Texas where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you, my call.
Absolutely.
I have a comment and then an observation. The party platform, absolutely. I have had these polls really, really getting on Trump. That it's the Republican platform that has kept me supporting him, even though he wasn't my first choice. And it's funny because I posted something on my Facebook page today about how I was not condoning his comments, nor his behavior. But there seems to be selective outrage on the part of women when it comes to Donald Trump. And the reason I say that is that the book, 50 Shades of Grey, sold over 80 million copies. And I think what I read is that the majority of the people who read it were women. That is as hypocritical as one can be. I've not read the books. I will not read the books. But to know that people who are criticizing him and castigating him possibly have read these books, and they're nothing but pornography. And yet they want to castigate him for something he said 11 years ago.
It's an interesting point. I too, have not seen nor read 50 Shades of Grey. 50 Shades of Grey, to me, it's black and white. You know, one of the things I think that, and it is to some degree manufactured, however, I'm very sensitive to this because I've done, you know, in the ministry, counseling and such, and just aware of the
how prevalent sexual abuse is in our culture. And this, his comments, you know, while they may not have been intended that way, as he was, they can't defend his comments, okay, just period. But some have taken them to be condoning sexual assault. And there are a lot of women, and including men, that have been sexually assaulted in their lives. And it just dredges up a lot of anger, hurt, shame, and it just, I mean, it's so widespread. I was shocked at how widespread that is, even in the Christian community. And so I understand some of the visceral reaction to this. I completely get it, understand that. Indefensible, not the type of people we want as leaders that we can, you know, that we want leaders that our children can emulate. Now, he did take responsibility, apologized. More importantly, is ensuring that that does not happen in the future and that he would hold himself to a higher standard of conduct, including speech, as a leader. But again, it comes back to the point of the choice we have before us. It's not like there's a third choice. There's two choices. That's why we're staying focused on the party platform, as each of the candidates have clearly aligned themselves with their party platforms. Carol, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. 866-372-7234. And let's go to Ohio, where Charles is on the line. Charles, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Yeah, you know, like you said, you know, I'm voting for the platform because when Cruz was done, I was done. I was not going to vote at all. I was done. And somebody had, you know, convinced me that basically what I try to convince other people now is that I'm not voting for Trump and I'm not really voting against Hillary. I'm voting against what Hillary will do to this country. I'm a Christian and I am. The Bible says abortion is wrong. Gay marriage is wrong. And I don't see, I keep trying to tell, I unfriended a minister today because, you know, he's a Hillary fan. And I said, you cannot be a Christian if you are voting for Hillary because she is for abortion. The two do not mix. You know, you're one way or the other. And, you know, like the Trump thing was something that he said earlier. And I said, yeah, it's wrong. You know, I'm totally against what he said. He did apologize for it, you know, it was 11 years. I've done deplorable things 11 years ago, you know, and I've grown past those. And real quick off topic, he never said anything in that video, because I listened to it twice, about actually sexually assaulting, you know, because when you have that kind of money and you have that kind of power, there are a lot of women who will let you do things like that. He never said forcefully do things like that. So there's no sexual assault in that video.
All right, Charles, thanks so much for calling. And, you know, I think that's instructive when you look at, as you said, I'm not voting for him, not voting against her, voting against what she would do to the country. That's essentially, again, the party platform. And when you look at roughly 80% of the time, the parties adhere to what they lay out in the party platform. And again, I want to encourage you to take a look at these party platforms, right? And you heard the professor talk about how churches use these because they can use them. It's not in violation of law for churches to show this information. You know, as Dr. Payne talked about that, and we've got that available for you. Actually, at TonyPerkins.com, we've got about a three-minute video that does a quick comparison. Sanctity of human life, marriage, religious liberty, a comparison where the parties actually stand on this. And again, let's just take the life issue. I talked about this earlier in the week, but on the life issue, the Democratic Party specifically says that they will repeal the Hyde Amendment. That is the provision that's been in the law almost 40 years. In fact, I think it is 40 years, that prohibits the government has, the Obama administration has trampled upon it, but prohibits the federal government for spending your tax dollars for elective abortions. They will overturn that. They also said they will continue to stand with Planned Parenthood. They will make sure that your tax dollars go to Planned Parenthood. That's specific. Those are what the professor said, rational. They're measurable. The Republicans, they said they will strongly oppose infanticide, support the following, the Born Alive Abortion Survivor Protection Act, the Human Life Constitutional Amendment, a ban on abortion after 20 weeks, that's 6 months, when babies can feel pain, a ban on abortion based on sex or disability, a ban on dismemberment abortion, in which unborn babies are literally torn apart limb by limb. I'm quoting from the platform. Abortion clinic regulations, safety regulations, a ban on human cloning, and on creating and experimenting upon human embryos, including three-parent embryos, a ban on any sale of fetal body parts, and a ban on the use of public funds to perform or promote abortion or to fund organizations like Planned Parenthood. And for the first time ever in the party platform, they named Planned Parenthood. You can't get any clearer than that. It's right there in black and white. All right, we're going to try to work another call here. Let's go to Joseph in Pennsylvania. Joseph, very quickly, what's your thoughts?
Hey, buddy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I got three quick points I'd like to make. First off, the Catholic thing. It kind of makes me wonder if maybe all the Catholic priests who were having those sexual affairs with boys were actually planted by some of these Hillary people. And the second thing, if you read the prophecy destroying the Catholic Church, a lot of people believe the false prophet will come out of the Catholic Church.
All right.
Platform, no doubt I'm going for it, because Jesus was made person when the Holy Spirit came in, during conception. There's no way that life begins after conception. It's at conception.
Right, right. That's Joseph, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate it. Look, folks, if it doesn't boil... I mean, you can boil it down to that one issue alone, as has been pointed out here repeatedly today by our callers, the life issue. If nothing else, the life issue. Talking about life, look at what the two of them said about the Supreme Court. Go back to the debate last Sunday night. We talked about this with Kathy Roos yesterday. No place in that debate was there a clearer contrast than on the Supreme Court. And this issue of life was front and center in that discussion. Again, folks, please, please make use of these resources we have available for you. It's a great short video, TonyPerkins.com. You can download it. You can play it. Put it on your Facebook. Share it with your friends. You can also download the PDF that you can print out, take it to church. You know, share this with your pastor. And pastors, this can be shown in your church, okay? Completely compatible with the law and compatible with your responsibility to equip the saints. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for being with us. Great to be with you today. Remember the words of the Apostle Paul. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.